Welcome to another episode of the Coffee Roaster Warm Sessions podcast, friends. We today will be diving into a little bit of sourcing green coffee qualities, characteristics, but also more specifically, what happens when you source old coffee? What does old coffee taste like? Why sourcing coffee in the right seasonality time is actually pretty darn important. Before we get into that, we have some batch brew. Let's get some batchy going.
This is steamy. Definitely a hot
this
one.
This is scorching. Yeah, this is.
Nice aromas.
Yeah, aromas are nice. Wow. Very purple. Very fruity.
Ooh, it's very hot.
It's woo.
Yeah.
Okay, well, folks, just notes of burnt tongue and scorched taste buds.
It's a good coffee. I like this coffee a lot. I've been pulling this on espresso at home on the Breville, brewing it on filter. Brewing out in batch is a good coffee.
Yeah, I like this coffee too. Probably not this roast. Again, I think this roast just has a little, yeah, just one of our experimental dial-in roasts somewhat. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just has a little, like, tastes like a little, there's a little too much color on it, just a hair. But a good roast, well, the roast that we have dialed in, I think, is stellar.
Yeah.
It's very nice. It's actually, you know, a natural that it definitely tastes, has qualities of a natural for sure. Mm-hmm. We're not saying that this is perfect. However, this is, it's nice. It's yeah. Definitely leans much more floral-esque.
Mm-hmm.
You keep saying, sure. You keep talking about how much it tastes like lilac.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's jasmine. Nice and airy, yeah. And like mm-hmm. almost like a geisha, like, but not quite, but mm-mm. That's kind of,
yeah.
That's kind of the same. Like, we just cupped the geisha, which I liked, but it had those, like, you know, those fun little fruit notes you're getting out of it. But then yeah. It also comes with like this delicacy of, florals, you know, so yeah. that's what I mean. Definitely not, it's not a geisha.
No.
Yeah, this is an Ethiopia natural, coming soon, very soon.
Yeah,
we're just getting some labels printed, which, man, label printing,
that's a whole nother podcast.
That is a whole that is a podcast worth having. Yeah. Actually, that is it's definitely challenge of its own and something to maneuver, and
yeah, I'm gonna leave it at that. Yes. We just need to move on.
Exactly.
Yeah,
well, cool. So this conversation was mostly just kind of inspired by conversation I just had. Somebody who reached out to us was like, hey, can you help me with some roasting? Here are kind of some of the problems that that they were running into. And so which part of it was they were sourcing some older green, but also they weren't getting the qualities that they want out of it. And I know from the last 4 years now of doing this, we've learned a lot. We've mm-hmm. had some ups and downs of our sourcing, and we've had coffees that have aged out where we've had to just remove them and take the loss on them because they're just not tasting as good as they were, you know, 4 or 5 months ago, or, you know, even 2 months ago. And then there's just lots of learning. So any thoughts on that, just to get us mm-hmm. get us rolling forward?
Planning a menu is really, really hard.
Yes.
So buying coffee according to a menu that is both for people who buy your coffee but also based on harvest cycles
mm-hmm.
is just a very big challenge.
Yeah. Yes. And now that, I mean, you mentioned harvest cycles, let's talk about buying coffee really, really fresh off of harvest.
Mm-hmm.
So there's usually Colombia is a really excellent origin because not only do they have phenomenal coffees, but they're also kind of, you know, have almost two arrival dates in terms mm-hmm. of seasonality where you can get some fresh crop. You have like your first crop, and then you have what they call fly crop. So it's like kind of secondary crop. It's excellent because it helps actually planning, especially when like the fall period, fall winter, coffees can, you know, you're not getting very much harvest from anywhere.
Right.
And so Colombia helps a lot with packing in the menu until you roll around to like springtime, and then you're getting, late spring, early summer, you're getting like Kenyans are arriving, Ethiopians are arriving, mm-hmm. Guats are arriving kind of like, again, late spring, midsummer-ish, kind of, you know, somewhere around there. And so Colombia is really what's kind of pushing the train over. What do you think, what are some of the benefits of, I know this may seem common sense, but it'll give us a nice juxtaposition.
Yeah.
What do you think is some of the benefits of sourcing coffee very fresh off of harvest? Which some stuff that we've done is like, we've even forward booked. So as soon as the soonest they can get into the States, it's already headed towards, mm-hmm. you know, to our roastery.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it does seem very common sense because fresher coffee, you're able to store it for a longer period of time, and you're going to be able to retain and maintain what you dialed it in the roast. It helps with consistency of roasting. That's mm-hmm. one. If your storage is consistent as well, right. You know, you have to make sure the weather probably at your roastery, or if you're storing green in a green room, is possibly changing. So if you mm-hmm. can maintain that temperature not to change and have that consistent temperature and humidity and right. store green that way, then fresher green will just last longer. Yes. And you're able to just have that quote unquote dial in for a longer period of time where you don't have to really maneuver things much, creates more consistency and more efficiency in the long run. So that's one thing. And then especially like you mentioned, when you're forward booking coffees and bring those coffees in and you've done it for years and years, you know what to expect out of, let's say, Jorge Mendez's coffee and how yeah. much shelf life it has.
Yes.
And if you can, if you can understand and like remember that shelf life,
yeah,
then you can plan your menu and when you need to get a alternative coffee, because that shelf life, because that coffee should be sold out by that day. Mm-hmm. Then you can also guarantee and do better at wholesaling and account management mm-hmm. because you know that Jorge Mendez at its prime is going to last X amount of months. Yeah. Therefore, you can guarantee that coffee to be around because you're going to buy enough green. So it's all a trickle-down effect. Mm-hmm. So it really plays a big role when it comes to efficiencies. And then you're building all those efficiencies around prime flavor.
Yeah. So there's a man, yes, definitely helps with planning your menu year round. Also helps with, you know, providing maybe your customers who, you know, wholesale accounts or places that want mm-hmm. a little more consistency, you know, through your coffee flavor profiles, you can plan that out. For example, for us, like we always want a coffee that, you know, for us, we categorize it as timeless, mm-hmm. which is coffee that's just timeless. Like it's a solid banger. It's kind of universally pleasing. And we plan out our menu around the year to have some of those coffees.
Yeah.
The difficulty though is like, you know, the difficulty is like when you have a staple like that you want year round, and then you go through it too fast, but then that means that, you know, that pushes you to have to replace that coffee at least until it comes back the following year, which then leaves you with potentially buying you know, green in not the freshest places yeah. where you don't have much control over, and you have to deal with you know, other things that come with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, and on the other hand, like you said, buying fresh green is what we've noticed is that our coffees roast yeah. very consistently. It just, they're a lot more easier to roast. They also give you a lot more give in the roast. Yeah. What I mean by that is like hopefully your consistency is dialed in, but a coffee, maybe a little like a give or take margin, it's probably going to taste still very clear. You're going to feel, it's going to taste like this is a good coffee, yeah, regardless. Coffees that I think age a little bit, and we'll talk about that shortly, they just don't have that kind of flexibility anymore. Yeah. And you really have to be spot on with it. So
yeah,
definitely helps with consistency, flavor, all that good stuff. Yeah. What are some of the things like coffee qualities that I think people can look out for when tasting fresh green versus not fresh green?
Mm-hmm.
And especially like if you're just like a home brewer, if you're just like pulling a shot of something or making a pour over, what are you looking out for? Yeah. I know you've tried other roasters' coffees, and we've been like, oh, it might not be, you know.
Yeah. I think what we probably need to define before we talk about more about all of this is, what is fresh green?
What's the
definition of fresh green?
That's valid.
Because for many people, fresh green is a calendar year, right?
Yes, yes.
We try to get all of our coffees within 3 months post-harvest. Mm-hmm. Is that correct? Or am I yes. over? Yeah. And then we try to serve those coffees for around 3 months, hopefully. So coffees are moving fairly quick. And the more we have of that quicker turnover, the more we... And again, all of this is like menu-based, right?
Yes.
There are some coffees, I'll be honest, we do keep longer than 3 months.
Of course. But
those coffees are also staples, and they have a consistency in flavor.
Yes.
That we don't sacrifice flavor just because we have a coffee in our roastery for over 3 months.
Yeah.
You know. But that's the reality. We try, I would say, avoiding all coffees. Fresh coffee would be anything within or under a year post-harvest.
Probably considering fresh coffees as being, you know, depending on processing as well.
Right.
Probably even like 9 months with some really solid storage. Yeah. Because of course storage makes a big difference. You mm-hmm. can store your coffees somewhat wrong, and either it's way too warm, way too hot, weird humidity levels. Yeah, mm-hmm. all kinds of things. And your coffee may not taste that great even at seven months, you know. And so I'm glad you brought that up, because that is definitely worth establishing.
Yeah.
And I know different people, different roasters, different priorities have that. That timeline's a little different. Yeah, yeah. So
For me, one of the things is when I cupped coffees with Edwin Martinez, and of course his role and job is to sell green coffee.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's not a sales guy for the company, but he's the CEO owner, right? So of course, but what I enjoyed about having this cupping with him alongside of mm-hmm. him and chatting with him was the fact that he was fairly transparent about, hey, this coffee, if you can't move this coffee within these couple of months, you probably shouldn't buy more than you can move within this couple of months.
Yeah.
And he was very transparent about it. And then some other like wash coffees that you and I already love, especially from the Via Toros, he was like, dude, this coffee will last you. This mm-hmm. will be a staple like throughout a long period of time. Mm-hmm. And I think the important part about that is understanding like you said, what does that taste like? Like what does faded green taste like? And then what processing methods correlate. So I will probably speak in more or less like blanket statements here, but it's kind of a general, very general synopsis of that is I would say a lot of natural processed coffees that don't have long shelf life.
Yes.
So my advice would always be like, keep your naturals fresh and keep them moving.
Mm-hmm.
You rather be regularly cupping new naturals and new green mm-hmm. than stocking up on something because it was so dang good.
Yeah.
Because it's actually going to fade out and it won't be as good as you think it was 100%. Or will be. So just keep that in mind, and knowing that allows you to always be on the hunt for that maybe tasty natural, that clean natural. Mm-hmm. Some of the things I've noticed when like naturals fade, they become even more one-dimensional.
Yes, yes.
They lose even more complexity, and then as all coffees that fade, they become that like dull flavor. And sometimes if it's not a very clean natural, it'll be even more fermenty. And then you'll kind of lose a lot of flavor in that, but it'll just be like, I don't know. By fermenty, I mean it borderline just tastes like bad acidity.
Yeah.
Like it's just not there. And then outside of that, I've also like found that in washed coffees, when washed coffees fade or when get stored for too long, mm-hmm. A lot of the times you'll taste is a lot of like just bagginess from the bag. Okay. Almost like a burlap flavor. Yeah.
So explain that. You know, if you know somebody, either somebody that's just a brewer at home, is, you know, anybody but but a roaster, because baggy is like, people are like, what do you mean, like a bag?
Musty.
Yeah,
just like musty flavors.
So they, so some more context. So coffee comes in these like burlap bags, which is like, how would you even define, like, it's like
a burlap is a material.
It's like, it's like twig, straw, almost like straw.
Not straw, but like, yarn almost. Something like, burlap.
And so baggy, to be honest, I don't know if this is true. I don't know if it's just a coined term or if the baggy, or if baggy comes from the bag actually imparting flavors in the coffee. To be honest, I don't know, but it's just a term for to say, hey, like, it's decreasing in quality of coffee, it's kind of aging, and it usually comes with this it's interesting. It's like this, the flavors are muted. They may be there, but they're definitely muted. And it's not even like paperiness. It's not paperiness, but it has this like, almost like, I've never tried this before, by the way, so take this with a grain of salt, but like if you were to put chaff and you were to brew chaff, like as a tea, and you drink that, that's I've never tried this before, but I think that's what I'm talking about. It's kind of has this like, I don't know.
It's almost like a woody, cardboardy, flatter flavor. Yeah. That's why I say musty, because it doesn't, it just kind of tastes like, if you like walk in a wet room and it evaporated. Necessarily wet dog, but you know what I mean? Yeah. It kind of tastes, it has that reminiscence of it. Not exactly, but that's paired with maybe a little bit of like, quote unquote, woodiness on the flavor.
The wet dog aroma.
Yeah,
that's it. In flavor.
Yeah,
that's it. Yeah, just also probably like tuned down, a little muted.
Yeah, yeah.
Insane like wet dog. But yeah, it's definitely not pleasing. And you know, chances are the scary thing with green is there's really no way to save it. Once it's gone, it's pretty much gone. Especially if you're roasting mostly kind of on the lighter end of the spectrum, you probably cannot save that. I know there's been, I don't know if this was Christopher Farron who tried, or but maybe not, like rehydrating green. Whatever that interesting process was, like that actually ended up bringing the score a little bit back, which I don't think is probably accessible for most roasters. So, but yeah, once it gets there, like no matter how you roast it, really, it's kind of at a loss.
Right.
The only thing you might be able to do with it, and again, just depends on who you're serving and stuff like that, you might be able to like roast it pretty dark and maybe use it for
blender.
Either a blender or, and I hate using that because blends could actually be really good. But again, like probably not something we would do, but if you're, you know, I guess I just have a different philosophy on coffee flavor, you might be able to do that. And so figure out ways how to save it. But that's why this is so important, is that hopefully you can get into a groove of sourcing coffees pretty fresh and you don't have to run into that, because it's really hard to save anything. You're pretty much toast.
And like you're saying, when it comes to saving green coffee, or by saving, it's not like bringing it back to where it used to be. You're saving it by saying, okay, this is not a complete loss. So it's more or less a business decision at that point. And I think that's where having a dark roast that people love, and no matter what coffee you throw in there, it still tastes the same. That's a save. So if there's no loss in flavor, you just save the green, right? You roasted 100%. If you roasted a fresh coffee dark and it tasted like chocolate caramel around, and then you roasted a two-year-old coffee dark and it tasted like chocolate caramel around, what's the loss?
Right.
And does it really matter?
100%.
If that's the flavor profile that you're trying to achieve and it hits all those markers, then does it really matter? Probably not. That would be a save in my books and in my opinion. You can do that. You can also buy cheaper coffees to achieve that. So at the end of the day, it comes down to like, how efficient are you in planning? What kind of calendar do you have? And do you need to bank on these coffees to save? What if you never have to save a coffee and you always had fresh green because you were cupping, sourcing, and selling really, really well?
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think part of a roaster's job, whether you're just a roasting company or roasting company plus a cafe, part of your roaster's job is you're literally finding tasty coffees from around the world, making sure they're fresh. That is part of your job. Roasting it exceptionally and then putting it into people's hands. Right. That's literally your job. However, the more you're rotating coffees throughout the year, it is a lot of work. Like, just for you to be able to just sample roast and cup, that's like, that could easily be 2-3 hours just from one session. And then you can cup them and be like, oh, I don't like any of these. Go on to the next set, and that's another 2-3 hours.
Yeah.
And, especially if you're like, owner, operator, run, 2-3 hours, 6-10 hours out of your week. Mm-hmm. That's quite the dig into your time. So, not to say that you shouldn't be doing that, but just know that's really the job of a good roasting company. This is what we signed up for.
Yeah. And that's why teams grow. The bigger your operations are, like, the more people you bring on that execute on different elements and have like level of expertise in different mm-hmm. spaces and elements, and you grow together. Like, it is really taxing and time consuming to be able to execute on all cylinders and to be able to do it like really, really well, For sure. So when it comes to something like green that affects every part of the company, whether it's how you roast it, your roasting approach, to mm-hmm. how you sell it, to what your marketing team does with it, to your partners overseas, like, it's such a broad thing. So when you choose a green coffee, yes, you're choosing maybe based on a cupping, but you're also making a choice that will affect your marketing team, that will affect your designer who's going to design the labels, because mm-hmm. even as picky as it could be, like, some of our coffees have these long names. So now the designer has to find a way to make sure that name stays on there. Then it'll affect everything from, oh, okay, now we have to dial in this coffee and it's dialing in different. So like, these decisions when it comes to choosing your green, but also the quality of your green, affect every part of your company.
For sure. And I think, again, as a roaster, that's literally your job. You have to figure this out, but also I read something from Roaster Cat. To be honest, I have no idea if this post on Threads was like sarcasm or true, or I have no idea. So I'm just going to take a whack at it. And I think there's a lot of truth to it, where she said the easiest way to become a better roaster is to source better green. And I don't know where she was going with that or what, but anyways, I thought that was actually very true, actually, unfortunately. Like, you could probably do the same roast approach and roast better green, fresher green, and it's probably gonna taste better than your worst. In my opinion, I'm not saying it's gonna taste exceptional. I'm just saying chances are it might taste a little better. And so, where I was, actually, you should mention your thought, and then I have a question for you.
Well, no, what I was going to say is, like, the quality of your coffee is the best when it's still on a tree. Everything after that, it's losing quality,
And you can't really stop it.
That's kind of like a hypothetical statement, but that's also like, I'm talking in like exaggeration there. Mm-hmm. Yes, that is true. Like, as soon as the coffee is picked, as soon as it's processed, gets shipped, it's losing quote unquote quality. So yes, the best way to become the best roaster is to source better green. But in reality, you're not making your coffee better. Like, you know what I mean?
Right, right, right.
You're just buying better green.
Right, so, right. You're starting at a little bit of a higher.
Yeah, higher. Yeah. So you might be moving, like, it's almost like maybe you're getting a head start, or it's a fun little statement. I'm not saying I disagree with it.
Yeah, yeah.
But the reality is, like, buying better green doesn't solve your ability to roast coffee well.
100%, yeah.
But you also can't, like, have these bonkers coffees without buying better green just by roasting super good.
Right.
Coffee inherently is tastes like chocolate and caramel, you're not going to roast blueberries into it.
100%. Yeah, totally. As we, you know, we have like maybe 5-10 minutes. What have you noticed from kind of our experiences where we've had to literally pull coffees off the site to say, hey, they're just not tasting that great? What are some of the things that you've noticed in maybe roast or how coffee roasts, roasting a fresh coffee versus like somewhat little aged coffee? Mm-hmm. If you have, I don't know.
I mean, the curve just changes. I mean, if you want like details, I would say like a lot of the times, like we started noticing like our turnaround, temps started changing. Mm-hmm. That was a big one. And then how it reacts post crack was mm-hmm. very much different. And a 100%. Lot of the times, I mean, maybe I'm wrong here. A lot of the times it just doesn't stay consistent. It goes fairly hotter.
Yes.
And
yes.
Then you're like, oh shoot, like now you need to bring it down. So you need to rearrange the whole curve. And now you're rearranging the whole flavor profile. And now it doesn't taste like the coffee you bought.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that has been like a major issue.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Definitely won't be roasting the same. And I mean, we've had coffees where we've had them come in very fresh. We'll dial it in. And then, you know, maybe 2 months later, the coffee's, I mean, again, this isn't saying that it's bad 2 months later.
Yeah.
It's just like the coffee's changing. It's a living organism. It's got moisture content. You know, there's outside the environment's impact affecting it, and so we're just tweaking the roast literally as we're going QCing. We're constantly adjusting. Oh, this it could do a little lighter. Now it needs to go a little, you know, a little darker. And you're just adjusting on the fly.
Yeah.
So
for sure.
Any final thoughts on bag yield green?
I mean,
avoid it at all costs.
Avoid it. Yeah, but I'm like the solution is just like you got to cup green. Manage inventory well. Like, that's the solution for the most part.
Yeah. That's a wrap, folks. Thank you so much for listening to this old AG green coffee conversation.
I'm actually wearing a green shirt, too.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Look at that. Sergi's just on brand with the episode. Lovely. Thank you so much for listening or watching to another episode of the Coffee Roaster Warm Sessions podcast. And as we always say, remember, reflect what's good.